Hey everybody, welcome back to Snick Snick Boom, an X-Men podcast. We are a member of the Film Dispenser podcast network, which you can find at filmdispenser.com. We're on iTunes, we're on Stitcher, just search Film Dispenser, all one word. And I am one of your hosts, Logan.
I'm Ryan.
And this is Anthony.
And we are having some technical difficulties with Skype, so hopefully everything got worked out in the editing process, but if it's a little rough, we apologize. So, yeah. We are here to talk about X-Men, the animated series, and we are on, I did not write down the episode numbers.
It's 9 and 10.
9 and 10.
Yes, episode 9 and 10.
Yeah, it's The Cure and it's Come the Apocalypse.
Yeah, which
is the title of the X-Men sex tape.
Yeah. It's funny because this is not billed as a two-parter. There's no to be continued at the end of The Cure, but it's definitely a two-parter, right?
Oh, I totally agree.
So, I mean, it doesn't really end on a real cliffhanger, but as far as the episodes we've watched up until now, this is more of a cliffhanger than anything else we've seen. I mean, there was an episode that said to be continued, and we were all like, I don't know why it was to be continued.
Yeah, I definitely feel like these two kind of follow the same storyline, so it's not, you get a full story in each episode, but they're all part of the same timeline of story. You know, it's the same bad guys, the same good guys. It picks up where the last one left off, so it's definitely not independent of the series, so to speak.
Yeah. So let's get into The Cure. Not the band.
Thank goodness for that.
Oh, whoa, wait.
I'm joking.
Okay. I was about to say, you just got booted off the podcast, man.
No, I mean, I'm not a huge Cure fan, but I mean,
come on. There's at least two Cure songs that you have to like.
Well, and that's what I mean. I wouldn't call myself a fan, but I'm not a hater either.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
I'm kind of on the same boat. What was it? Mr. Robot? There was a Cure song?
Yeah. It's the one from Fight Club. That I can never remember the name of.
Yeah, and I mean, I just didn't even really know that was The Cure, so.
It's just like, hey, it's that song from Fight Club.
Which is the key to their success, probably. He's like, I love that song. That's The Cure?
Okay, so speaking of 80s music, this episode opens with, the most 80s synth pop crap that I've ever heard with somebody who I didn't even know was Warren Worthington until he said, my name is Warren Worthington the third.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. Did you need to add the third? The third. There's two more that will come right after me.
I feel like that's you're being introduced to the third member of Wild Stallions.
Bill S. Preston, Esquire,
Ted Theodore Logan,
and Warren Worthington III on drums. So yeah, he's having this romantic encounter with this girl, and she makes some offhanded remark about this being the cabin of some Dr. Frankenstein type dude, and he's just like, it's time for you to go. I was like, what is up with that? This Playboy Lothario just is totally dismissive. Like, he's about to score with there's a lot of almost scoring in these two episodes. For this to be a kid's cartoon, there's a lot of innuendo, man.
Yeah. And what's with the girl being Russian? It's just because they're in cold weather, she has to be Russian?
Is that what that accent was?
I think it's supposed to be.
I don't know about y'all, but I felt like both of these episodes were filled with bad accents. Just terrible.
Oh, yeah. Terrible accents.
Yeah, yeah. We'll get to Moira McTaggart. Dear Jesus. So, he tells the chick she's got to go. And then in the other room that's apparently there's a science lab in this cabin. Chalet. Isn't that what he calls it?
I think so, yeah.
How white are you, dude? Like, I was like, did he just say chalet? When he's like, you picked the wrong chalet to...
What I didn't get is, like, when he said that, I was like, what are you gonna do with those pretty boy wings? Like, to Cable,
dude has a giant gun.
Dude will just straight blow you up, man. I mean, like, he's from the future.
And it's funny to me because he's already manhandled him at this point,
right?
So it's not like you're the wings come out and then what?
Yeah,
it's like, you don't fly. You don't pick him up and fly him high enough to drop him and kill him. So
no, well, before Cable like roughs him up and throws him out the window. All right, Angel walks into that room and they get into that tussle. And Angel pulls out a gun. Where did the gun come from?
That's a good question.
And why is he walking around packing heat?
Like, is that why the chick had to go? He was like, oh, you're sitting on my gun. And then what's even weirder is she didn't leave. She comes back in. And she's like, Warren, I can't do whatever bad accent that is. And Cable's just hiding behind the door?
Now, this is possibly my favorite scene in the whole show, minus one other scene that we'll get to. But I love that it hangs on it so long that it's like he's bigger than the door, but she still doesn't see him.
I couldn't get over that, like... Dude is a teleporter from the future. Like, how? Why are you hiding behind the door? Like, I don't.
That's some serious ninja skills right there. He was like Cable Vanish, which resulted in him standing behind the door.
Then we go from that to, because it ends on, Warren screaming or something. Or no, Cable finds out from the girl where Dr. Adler is. And she says something like he went to Scotland. And Cable's like, oh, you mean Muir Island? Yeah, that's what she means. She said Scotland. So then it cuts to Muir Island with Moira and the professor. And they're looking for Dr. Adler too. So, or... Moira's telling the professor about what Adler's working on, and Professor X, like, he knocks on the door, right? But Adler's like, go away, can't be bothered right now. And his
the only thing missing from that was like a little dwarf like popping out of the popping out of the door. And, oh no, the wizard's not here right now.
yeah, nobody sees the wizard. Nobody. Bail out of order, please knock. That's what you should have had.
And then he hangs up a sign that says no knocking. So since he can't be bothered, the professor decides, oh, I'll just read his mind instead. Like, okay, because you're not violating any ethical code of conduct at all there, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and then gets this like psychic feedback of Mystique and Apocalypse, and I love the professor, like when he's talking to Moira, and she's like, he's working on a cure, in her horrible accent. Oh dear God, man.
Yeah.
Like I mean, just the
accent. Everything about her, she doesn't sound Scottish.
Her face is like, weird. I don't even think they finished animating her. Yeah. They're just like, oh, it's just some sick.
The island doesn't look Scottish. It's like everything about the Scotland part of this thing, like even the pub, like none of the mutants are Scottish.
I don't know. Pyro's supposed to be something. I don't know. I
Flame Flamboyant, maybe?
Yeah, I think he's actually Australian in the book, but I'm not sure. But I don't think the show cares.
The stuff with Pyro and Avalanche was is it Avalanche?
Yes.
Yeah, it was. I just don't know. I mean, I was like, what? Like, they acted like friends at first, right? And then they acted like they didn't even really know who each other were.
Yeah.
But the thing that going back to the Moira thing, like, when she says cure and he's like, don't say cure. Like, don't call it a cure. Like, okay.
And then he gives the after school special explanation.
Oh,
being a mutant is like being a regular human being. And I'm like, okay, Professor, that's just, you're smart dude, but even that's a little bit hard to swallow.
He said Homo sapien, and like when he started to say Homo sapien, like all that went through my head was homosexual. and it just made it funny. Not that homosexuals are funny, but
yeah. Yeah, so we don't want to offend anybody out there who may be listening. That's not what this podcast is about.
It just made it funny coming out of his mouth.
Well, yeah. But think of it. It would be like somebody trying to explain that. It's like it can be the same, but it's still different, too. You can't deny the difference.
We've got the cure.
And like it's the exact same.
Yeah, yeah.
But the point... obviously, he was making was that it's not something to be cured.
Yeah,
like, just like what you're talking about.
The approach to it was very, like, lashing out at this person. It was like, geez, okay, man, I'm sorry.
They're not in Scotland. They're in the deep south.
In the deep south. Yeah, she's not actually Scottish. She's just married to her brother.
She has a speech impediment.
So from there we go to the X-Men fixing up the mess that was made of the
Juggernaut. Mansion.
Yeah, from Juggernaut, which was not on the previously on, right? So if you didn't see the last episode, you have no idea what happened. It was like, did somebody blow up the mansion?
Yeah. Well, I think they try to fix that by saying his name right off the bat.
Yeah, yeah.
Man, that Juggernaut sure did a number on this mansion.
Good thing Jean Grey can drive nails with her mind.
Yes. Which I gotta say makes her a little bit cooler, but I'm like, why don't you do that when you fight? Pick people up in the air. Why don't you shoot some nails at them?
Am I wrong? Is this the first thing we've actually seen her do in the entire series?
I want to say it's like the first, serious thing we've seen her do.
Yeah. That was pretty cool use of her powers, though. Like,
yeah, everything else has been mostly like, oh, I just can't do it. Or something stupid like that.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I really liked the rogue angle in this, because this is, to me, what separates her from what they did in the actual movies, where she's kind of a cross between Jubilee and Rogue.
Yeah, she was kind of useless in the movie, except for, like, being that thing that Magneto needed to, like, perform his plan.
Right. And so, like, the two things I really like about this episode is I like that it shows, out of all of the really corny emotional depth that it shows via a lot of the other characters, the kind of the internal turmoil that Rogue feels, I think, being that it's kind of geared towards a slightly older, like, adolescent audience.
Emo teen.
But I feel like it's the first time that it actually hits the right chord for the audience.
Yeah, I could agree with you there.
Because it's about fitting in and feeling like an outcast, and what would you change yourself just to appease the masses, you know.
Her arc does get very, like, sped up at the in the second episode, but
oh yeah,
she at least does have a character arc, right?
Yeah.
So
and this was like the first one though that I remember when I first watched this series as a young as younger adolescent, where I actually really became a fan of Rogue. And I think it's because of that. You relate to her.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
Well, this revisiting this series is making me like the two X-Men characters, two of the few X-Men characters that I have never, ever, ever, ever liked. And that's Rogue and Gambit. Still don't like Storm. But, yeah. Speaking of Gambit, my favorite thing in this episode is the battle of who can clean up better with Wolverine and Gambit. Like, Wolverine running around bossing everybody, like telling them what to
do. I was like, this is so bad.
It kind of made him seem like a tool, right?
Absolutely. I'm like, you're awfully bossy for somebody who constantly abandons the team.
Well, and then he makes that statement, like, there's no traitors in, like when the professor speaks to him later.
Yeah.
He's like very openly vocal about it.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
who,
you bounce every time you time you're mad, you bounce.
who would want that? Like, I don't know, the chick that can't touch anybody, you know? but yeah, like in the fight of Wolverine versus Gambit, especially this fight, like I'm with Gambit and his giant playing cards. You're being a total douche, Wolverine.
Which you gotta say though, I gotta say, now that you mention this, where you say she can't be with anybody, like I wonder why they never took it down the Wolverine Rogue route, because up until this point, like, now we all know eventually that the claws were original, but we don't know that to this point. So why would the writers not open that door? Because I'm like, what's the worst that could happen? She could kiss Wolverine and suddenly heal quickly.
Yeah, that would have been but we see that in the first X-Men movie, right?
Yeah, like he stabs her and she touches him to heal quick. Yeah.
So I'm just like, you know, it's not like her problem is unsolvable, like the episode kind of makes it out to be. But and just like I thought, how interesting that they would not take it that way in writing it, when obviously even in the movie they kind of allude to that.
Yeah, it's
which may be why the relationship was inappropriate in the movie.
One of the many, many failings of the writing of this TV show. So Rogue gets all like emo about it, which rightfully so, after Xavier tells them about what's going on, and then she runs off and Gambit tries to stop her, right, with some flirting and like all that nonsense. Again, tons of flirting with people in this. Like, Wolverine was flirting with Jean Grey, right?
I know, right?
I mean,
like, don't you need some help?
Let me show you that. I had to hammer those nails in that.
Yeah, it's like I'm really good with my hands. Yeah, I'm like, I'm not even a Cyclops fan, but dude, he's like 10 feet away. That's not cool.
That's actually would have been funny if they had to write that in. If he looked and been like, dude, I'm right here.
He does walk up to him with his hands on his hips and like stares at him real like, hey, now knock that off.
Yeah. Now I gotta say the next scene though with Rogue, we're coming to that one, but Rogue and Cyclops in the car.
You mean Gambit?
I mean Gambit.
Sorry. Yeah, where she throws him out of the car.
Yeah.
But I have like, this is the most promising scene that I was most disappointed in that if we were in the movie version of this episode, that scene would have went on for like 2 minutes, where she'd have kept trying to lose him and he'd have kept popping back up in the car.
Yeah. It was fun. Like, despite the animation on the show can be really, really rough sometimes. But I thought all of that was really, really fun. And then we get Ro, like, first of all, she decided to go to Scotland. Why didn't she get in the car? You can fly.
I'm going to Scotland.
There's not a bridge to Scotland, Rogue.
Not to mention if you're gonna sneak off.
Right. I'm gonna sneak away in the car.
About the time where we get the Jubilee scene? Y'all have to know what I'm talking about. They're like all arguing.
And no, Jubilee... That's before this.
Okay, well, Jubilee comes running in. That's when the professor calls. Hey, guys, guess who wants to talk to us?
Oh, yeah. Like, somebody hit Jubilee with a brick. Like, can't you see we're in the middle of something?
I used to not mind Jubilee, but she is the worst character on this show.
No, Cyclops is the worst, man. He is the absolute worst. But no.
Jubilee just tends to be the most useless.
Yeah, she's
hey, like, guys.
Useless. Her character,
guess who wants to talk to us?
Catalyst, but, yeah. It's like she's only there to tell you who's on the phone.
And nobody asked Xavier, right? Like, yeah. Hey, dude, like you just bailed and left us a note that said you were going on a journey.
Yeah, and did you know that the mansion has been trashed by your brother?
Yeah, like what the heck, man. So yeah, that then Rogue finally flies off, right, and hitches a ride on a jet plane to Scotland. Okay, that's fine. Like, I can kind of understand that, but she's just sitting on the wing right now. I'm not a pilot and I don't know that much about planes,
but aerodynamics.
I'm slightly familiar with aerodynamics because I know that it is much like I could glue something to the roof of my car, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if I start driving 100 miles an hour down the freeway, it's gonna blow off.
Or at least cause you to slow down, one or the other.
Yeah, but I think you're missing what's going on here. This is actually was one of my favorite scenes in it. I think this is an homage to that William Shatner.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It absolutely is. Because the guy's
I think the whole point, though, yeah. Yeah, I think the whole point of it is just that.
Yeah.
They were like, what if Rogue was on the wing and somebody saw her and started freaking out like is in that episode? And I was like, that's pretty genius to add something that obvious but kind of subtle in a show where most of the people watching probably not going to get it.
Yeah, I agree with you there. Like, it is definitely a reference that was over my head when I was 13. And I totally got that's what they were referencing, but I could not get around the fact that, like, no, she's like 6 feet tall and she's sitting on the wing of the plane. The force would either push her through because she's indestructible, would push her through the wing of the plane, or she would fly off from just sheer force.
Well, either that or, like, to me, the other problem is that since she's indestructible, wouldn't it create a drag on that side of the wing?
Oh, yeah.
And so absolutely. The plane would slightly start turning into a circle.
Yeah. So yeah, from there we get the avalanche and pyro stuff, which they're hanging out in costume at this bar. Apparently, this is a bar for mutants, I guess. Because eventually we get...
Like, or it's just a big costume party, one or the other.
Yeah. Well, it is Scotland, so...
Yeah. So, yeah, Rogue shows up in the bar, and then Pyro hits on her, and then sets the bar on fire.
But he also thinks it might be Mystique.
Right. So, I think he's just... Like everybody else in this, every other male, at least in this episode, I think he's just horny.
Ooh.
And Avalanche is John Wayne. Though, like, I wrote that in my notes. Avalanche is John Wayne? ? Because that is the John Wayne-iest drawl I've ever heard from a cartoon character.
Well, not to mention, like, his character's been in lots of the X-Men stuff. Like comic book and otherwise, and it was like there's nothing to say, to my knowledge, that he's from Texas or any other deeply southern drawn state. I mean, usually, whatever your power is indicative of where you're from.
Yeah.
So it would seem like at best he was from Colorado.
Well, isn't that where John Wayne was from? Colorado?
I don't know, is it?
I don't know. I'd have to
look that up. If it is, I stand corrected.
I have to look that up. So Rogue has her little thing with those. You get this flashback about her first kiss with that kid Cody, and the movie definitely lifted a lot of this, right? The first X-Men movie.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
So that was my immediate thought. I did not realize how much, at least, I would say the first X-Men movie and X-Men 3 are really kind of inspired by this TV series. I don't think X-Men 2 is. X-Men 2 is more inspired by God Loves, Man Kills. So, those two, X1 and X3, really...
Yeah, they spawned a lot of ideas off of the cartoon.
So, yeah. Sorry, I was trying to look up where John Wayne was from. So.
Iowa.
He's from Iowa. Oh, okay. You look... Well, so...
Saved by the corn.
Saved by the corn. So, yeah, Rogue has her little thing with them, gets her flashback, and then we get Pyro and Avalanche... wandering around the rocks for some reason. They got bored at the bar and walked down to the...
Yeah, I was almost... I was like, am I watching the Count of Monte Cristo? Somebody about to get thrown off the edge.
Yes, in fact. So that's where they run into... Bum, bum, bum. Cable's back, guys. So we haven't seen him since 4.5 minutes ago. So Cable's on Muir Island. And Pyro calls him Darlin, and I my favorite line of the episode is, "Don't call me Darlin," and he shoots Pyro.
Well, the funny thing is, Cable's the only character in this whole thing, with maybe the exception of Professor X, that doesn't sound like he has an accent that somebody's doing.
Right. It just sounds like even Wolverine is somebody trying to do a gruff kind of
Clint Eastwood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Cable is just, sounds somewhat normal. But yeah, Cable's also looking for this Dr. Adler guy who is secretly Mystique in disguise. So,
now here's where it kind of jumps shark for me.
Yeah. Big time, right? So,
because after they do this whole, Adler thing. The kidnapping thing's next, right? The ploy to kidnap.
Yeah, Cable leaves, and Pyro comes up with a plan to kidnap Dr. Adler because I guess they're just looking for something to do, and everybody else wants this guy, so let's kidnap him. So they go find Adler.
Everybody who's shooting at us, let's give them a reason to shoot at
right.
us.
Right. So. So, yeah, they go find Adler and try to kidnap him, but they somehow blow up the machine that's going to, do whatever Apocalypse wants to do, and then find out it's actually Mystique is Dr. Adler. So, and Cable's, right on their tails, and Mystique... is telling them, "You fools, I work for Apocalypse," and da da da. And actually, I'm sorry, my favorite line in the episode is Pyro looking at Avalanche and going, "Personally, I find this frightfully confusing." Understatement of the.
Well, because doesn't he in either right before that or right after that tell you basically what's going on?
Yeah.
Do you mean? Apocalypse is using the machine to turn mutants into slaves.
Yeah, and he's like, "I find this frightfully confusing." No,
this is it seemed pretty straightforward a minute ago.
So yeah, Cable's gonna kill Adler. Rogue shows up, stops him. Then Scott and Jean show up with the professor. No, they they're chasing Rogue. They haven't. I don't think.
Yeah, but it's kind of at complete random. You have no idea that they've even left.
Yeah, yeah, they just show up. Cable, like, throws a grenade at him and takes the pin out and spits it on the Adler's head because Rogue, I mean, Mystique transforms back into Adler, so her cover's not blown. And Cable, like, spitting that pin on the Adler's head is so awesome. Yeah. And then Cable throws a grenade at him and then shoots at them. But Jean levitates a rock to stop the shot. And I'm sitting there going, like, Cable just almost shot his own dad. Because, spoiler alert, guys, Cyclops is Cable's father, in the comics at least. So I'm like, boy, that would have messed up the time-space continuum.
Well, how great of a foreshadowing would that be, though, if he had actually shot him and then Cable would have been injured somehow?
Oh, that would have been great.
Cable would have just dissipated. Just
he's like, all of a sudden, he's Marty McFly in that picture. Like, play faster. Yeah, Jean actually accidentally falls off a cliff, or, like, in the tussle, gets knocked off the cliff, forgets she has telekinesis, and Rogue has to fly to her rescue. Because she can levitate a rock, but not herself.
But and don't you see her levitate herself in episodes?
Yes.
Okay.
That's why I was just like, why did Rogue have to... And Scott's just like, thank you, Rogue. Thank you so much. I'm like, why don't you... Like, you're so critical of everybody else. Why don't you look at Jean and go, really, Jean? Really? Rogue had to rescue you? Come on. So,
that'd have been funny.
So, yeah, everything kind of just magically works itself out, right? Like, Cable gets away, Adler gets away.
Then Rogue helps him build the machine again.
Yeah. Rogue, like, Rogue helps
him. Talk about not learning your lesson.
Rogue helps him, her, rebuild the machine, and then decides that she doesn't want to change. Flies out of the giant hole in the roof, and runs into Angel. And Angel says, how do you fly without wings? And she's like, I don't know, I just do. Greatest explanation for mutant powers of all time. And then...
Does Rogue fly out of the hole in the roof in that episode?
She flies out of somewhere, I don't know.
Okay, because in the second episode, she flies into the hole in the roof and says... What is he putting in a skylight?
Yeah. So, it might not have been a hole in the roof. I just remember there being a hole in the roof.
I think that happens in the second episode. I think in the first episode, she flies out of the hole that Avalanche and Pyro blast into the side of the
vehicle. Okay, yeah, that's what it is. Yeah, this lab takes a beating, man.
A I'm beating, yeah.
So
their insurance must be crazy.
So, yeah, Angel, or Warren Worthington, sorry. I guess he's not known by Angel. Although he's wearing a superhero costume. What's up with that? Like, just something he has?
Well, not to mention it looks like it was spawned off of, like, or at least inspired by what He-Man wore when he was not He-Man.
Well, to be fair, it's very true to at least one of Angel's costumes. I think the Defender's costume was the red and white Angel costume. And they get it pretty accurate. Like, Mystique is another character that they get. Like, she looks like she does in the comics. Like, everybody else looks a little off, but she looks
I thought Apocalypse close. Was fine. I thought Apocalypse was the best thing about both episodes.
We'll get to Apocalypse.
Yeah.
We gotta wait for Come the Apocalypse.
The name of the X-Men sex tape.
Yeah. Angel wants to be cured. And so Adler/Mystique wanders down into some caves screaming Apocalypse's name, which, like, that's how you find him, you know? Okay, whatever. And then Apocalypse gives his speechifying about how he's going to destroy the world. End of episode, no to be continued. Now we get to talk about Come the Apocalypse, which, oh my god, this episode.
You can say whatever you want. So far, it's the best episode.
I don't think I'd argue with that, but oh my god, man. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed both of these episodes, but there's a lot of crazy stuff going on.
Oh, totally. But I think that's what lends to the fun of this. That's what makes it one of the better episodes, is that there's a lot more going on in this one than there were any of the ones in the past. Because usually the ones in the past, there's a singular storyline.
Yeah.
And this is where they start kind of getting into, like...
There's so much going on.
Yeah.
So, okay, so kind of, like, not rush through it, but Adler and Worthington are there. Like, it opens on them talking. He goes into the machine, and she transforms into Mystique, right? And, like, oh, yeah. We got you now, blah, 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 blah. And then we cut to the mutant bar. Oh, Worthington comes in talking about how he's cured and he doesn't have his...
Obviously, it's Mystique. Right. I was like, okay, obviously, this is Mystique.
Cyclops, like, very violently rains on his parade, right? Just like,
I'll show mutants. You.
Yeah. So... I love that.
Yeah, the thing that I found really interesting about these two parts is Mystique's character in general being a lackey of Apocalypse, because Apocalypse is kind of the antithesis of Magneto.
Yeah,
like Magneto is like, there's a war coming, you'll choose a side. Well, Apocalypse is like, destroy everybody. Apocalypse, you will all be my slaves. War.
Yeah. Mystique being his... in the books, it's Mr. Sinister. I don't understand why you can't just have Mr. Sinister.
Yeah, that would have been great.
So...
I mean, he's coming.
Yeah.
I think they're playing off of the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse thing.
Yeah, well, they are, but Mr. Sinister was instrumental in doing all of that. Like, he's the one that does the experiments in the comics.
I want to know about the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse.
Yeah, okay. So,
you want to jump into that?
Well, I want to talk about the bar. just a little bit of the bar.
Okay,
I just want to say, the designs on those mutants, what the hell?
Well, they're horrible. Like, aren't a few of them kind of like, didn't we see them as part of the Morlocks in there? Or if they're not the Morlocks.
There's definitely a few that should be living in tunnels under cities. So, and I love the fact that apparently Apocalypse has cameras everywhere. Because from the bar, we cut back to him watching a feed of the her telling everybody about the cure, and then we get the debut of Archangel and the first montage, right? This has got to be the first montage we've had in the show. I don't know.
Are you talking about the newsreel thing?
No, I'm talking about the Horseman montage where
it was
changing the people into the other three Horsemen of the Apocalypse.
Oh, okay.
It's a very brief montage. You're right. It's horrible.
I was like, what?
What? My notes say WTF with the horses.
Yeah.
Like, I have to take this as literal as possible. I got you all. Steel horses.
Dead fly.
We're going to play Bon Jovi as you ride off to destroy the world. So,
because I'm wanting.
Nice.
Yeah, the horsemen are terrible, man. They're just terrible.
But one of them is good. And the other three are like, who are these guys?
Yeah, yeah.
What?
The only one that matters is Death, right?
And the only one that knows who anybody is Professor X. I recognize these mutants. They were on Muir Island searching for a cure.
Yeah.
Well, the crazy thing to me about like Angel, for example, he's got possibly the most names out of any superhero / villain. He's Angel. He's Mr. Worthington III. He's Archangel.
He's War.
He's Death.
Yeah.
But But then I'm like, if he's death, then does that make him the angel of death?
So back at the mansion, we have, I'm assuming they're at the mansion. I don't know. Maybe they're still at the bar. They're playing pool. They're at a rec room. And Gambit tries to get another kiss from Rogue. Like, geez, man.
Yeah. It has to be at the mansion because Storm is in the scene.
Okay, yeah. She's
like, just because they call it a rec room.
Doesn't mean you have to. Right, that's it, yeah, because he goes, Storm makes jokes now? What next? Next is the apocalypse, Gambit. Don't ask questions like that. Anytime you say, what's next? It's always really, really bad. So Apocalypse shows up to stop this press conference. I love Apocalypse's dialogue. It's so good, and I didn't even look up who the voice actor was. I meant to, but the way he delivers it is phenomenal.
Yeah, this episode is my favorite episode so far.
Well, I absolutely despise. Now, this the design is very true to the comic book version of the character, but this is the one thing I hate about the comic book version of the character. Why is there an A on his chest? Not his chest, his belt. Why? What? Why?
A is for Apocalypse.
Apocalypse is also, like, he's Egyptian, but maybe spent too much time in Texas. So I have to wear the letter on my belt so everybody knows who I am. Like, what the hell?
Yeah, but I think this goes back to, like, any of the early designs of...
I know, but it just is so ridiculous.
Well, I don't get why he's got, like, he's got such a massive mouth. he's like, he looks like he should be doing toothpaste commercials.
Yes, he does.
Because he's got, like, this giant, like, when he laughs, he's like, it's just a massive smile.
My favorite part with Apocalypse, though, is when he like drops down on that dude after throwing the gargoyle at him, and he's like, look upon the future and tremble, and then he just grows slightly larger. Like, yeah. I'm so scared right now.
Well, it was funny because if they'd have played the timing out on that, it would have been awesome. When he said look upon the future, he should have grown in between the statement, and then and tremble should have not been like and tremble, it should have been like and tremble.
Yeah.
You know, something kind of a little bit more like I'm about to kill this man.
So, the X-Men are watching this press conference, and Xavier sends Rogue to check out the whatever's going on Muir Island, because he recognizes those mutants. And
right. We
get another, like, kind of, not a montage, but some action of the horsemen kind of doing their thing. And I think the whole please food thing is, like, the most artistic segment ever on this show. Like, so whoever the animator was like, no, I'm making my statement right here. Like, I'm an artist and this is the way I'm doing it, because it felt like something out of like a Sally Struthers commercial.
Yeah, it did have kind of an avant-garde-ness to it.
And dear God, those horses fly incredibly slow, and they never move their legs. Like,
I know, I was funny. Like, what did Apocalypse steal some freaking, what do you call it, with the horses? Did he steal some carousel horses and was like, yeah, now you fly? Yeah.
he put them on the machine.
Yeah.
And turned them.
I am not even joking. Like, go watch the original Clash of the Titans, like the old 1980 Clash of the Titans.
Yeah, with the little
Pegasus
owl.
So much better than the animated horse.
Is it 1980s?
Yeah, it's 19. It was actually
late 70s.
It was actually, I think it was made in 78, but it didn't get released until 1980.
Oh,
so,
wow.
So yeah, it's coming up on, well, it just had its 35th anniversary. Wow. So
the dude that did the voice of Apocalypse started acting in 1950.
Holy cow.
Yeah. Now, I will say, he is one of my favorite villains in the whole X-Men series, because he can't be appeased in that. Like, he's not like...
Yeah, it's just, there's no...
Yeah, and Xavier points that out, too. He's like, you can't reason with him. But you know what I found really interesting is, And this may be why I think he's interesting as a villain, is because he's the most indicative of what's going on in our world right now. Because you got to think this cartoon was made pre 9/11.
Right.
And so all bad guys were like, you know, all driven by some kind of like logical motive, even though it was madman motive. It was, it had reason to it, even if the reason was like bent or skewed.
It is very like extremist, right?
Yeah, well, because they call him a terrorist mutant.
Yeah.
And it's the first time you really see kind of a...
Well, I think they call Magneto that too, but I'm not sure. Don't remember.
Well, I don't remember. It didn't stand out to me, but this one did. And I thought, how interesting, because it's the whole World Summit, like, guns thing and stuff.
Yeah,
which is everything that Clinton stood for in office. And then 9/11 happens, and it kind of changed the worldview on that. It became like, not like, oh, we need to demilitarize everything, because diplomacy went out to like, well, man, we need to at least keep something in the back of our pockets.
Right.
You know, because
apocalypse guys might show up.
Yeah.
Logan, you're a Battlestar Galactica fan, right?
The new version, not the old version.
Well, the guy that voiced Apocalypse played Baltar in the old version.
That's him?
No crap. Yep.
I know who that is. Like, he played
Alan Quartermain in King Solomon's Treasure in 1979, which was the year we were born.
Wow. That's crazy. So Rogue goes, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. I want to get back.
No, you're good. You were wondering, and I looked it up, and I was his name is John Kalikos.
That's interesting. Yeah, I remember.
He's been involved in Star Trek and a lot of sci-fi stuff. War of the Worlds TV series.
Yeah.
Alfred Hitchcock.
So yeah, Rogue goes over to Muir Island to figure out what's going on. Confronts Dr. Adler, figures out Dr. Adler is Mystique, has a little showdown with her, forgets that she's indestructible because Mystique just escapes. I'm like, she had a gun. What was she going to do? Shoot you in the eye? I mean, two X-Men that are virtually indestructible. And they're always, like, not putting themselves in harm's way. I gotta tell you, man, if I could heal from anything, I'd be like, bump this mess, I'm taking this fool down. Like, he can shoot me 6 times.
Yeah.
So, so then we get the Four Horsemen versus the X-Men. And the pestilence thing where she falls out of the sky is the funniest thing. It's the funniest thing ever. And Cyclops' horrible pun, it's like, you won't be plaguing this world anymore, or something like that. It's like, oh dear God, man.
You know, it'd be funny. It'd be funny right there. That's a great place too. I know he died, but who's the multiple guy? Who? From like episode one.
He's actually not dead. Morph.
Morph. Yeah, yeah. The morph.
Yeah, I know he's not. Alert. I know he's But I wasn't gonna say that. But it'd have been funny for him to have a cameo right there to go, ooh, burn.
So did you guys notice that War's horse doesn't have any ears?
No.
No, but it doesn't surprise me. Those are the worst horses in the history of horses.
It's really distracting. Every time I saw his horse, it was like, that horse doesn't have any ears.
The other three. It's like, okay, Pestilence, at least she had to touch him. But it's like, War. And he just claps his hands together and a beam shoots out of his hands. Like,
well, and
how is that war, man?
And it, in some ways it controls things. In other ways it blows stuff up. I'm like, I don't understand what your superpower actually is.
It's the same as Apocalypse. It's undefined so that they can use it in whatever way they want. Or Jean Grey's.
War! Clap my hands. War! What is it good for? Clap your hands.
That would have been great if they'd be like, what is it good for? And then Rogue hits him with something and goes, absolutely nothing.
We should have been writing this show.
It'd have been a lot funnier.
Intentionally funny instead of not intentionally funny. I do like that Gambit saves Wolverine, but again, Wolverine doesn't need saving. I don't know why these people keep trying to save him. Dude can fend for himself. I like Wolverine, and I like to think that if I were in the X-Men, we'd be friends. But every time he was in trouble, I'd be like, you're on your own, indestructible. I ain't helping you. You help me, fool.
You got metal for bones, man.
It's funny because they never help in the way that's logical.
Right.
If you got Wolverine, he's indestructible. Pick that mug up and throw him as hard. Like Rogue, when she throws somebody, I was like, that's what you need to do. You should need to grab him and throw him at Apocalypse.
Chris, I'm going to credit Chris Claremont, but it's probably not him. It's probably Lynn Wine or somebody. Colossus used to do this in the comics. It was called a fastball special. He would pick up Wolverine and hurl him at something so that Wolverine would just be this little ball of indestructible adamantium claws and fur, just going at something like a human missile. And it's perfect, man. So,
of course.
So, yeah, we get Rogue, she's fighting Apocalypse, briefly, right? And Apocalypse has the power to blow her jacket off. Did y'all notice that? Yeah. Her jacket just disintegrates, not the rest of her clothes, which I guess are made from the same thing.
Her jacket, though, she picked up at JCPenney's.
Yeah, obviously.
It's off the
rack. Well, it's probably Walmart.
I'm just saying,
she is from the South.
It insinuates that everything is specially designed for her superpower, except the shirt jacket thing that she wears.
But I guarantee you she's got another one, because it's going to be in the next episode. Her and Gambit just have one closet full of clothes. And did y'all notice that in the first episode, Gambit was wearing the same outfit? Everybody else has other stuff on, kind of. And
that happens a lot in this show, though.
They only have one character model for Gambit. So
but weird. It's not just Gambit. It happens a lot. Think back to the other episodes when they're be incognito, and then Jubilee shows up in her outfit, but everybody else is in street clothes.
Rogue, everybody shows up at this Apocalypse fight. Rogue takes out Archangel, kind of taking him out of Apocalypse's control. She blues herself. are y'all fans of Arrested Development?
No. I haven't seen that episode.
When Tobias gets blue paint all over him, he's like, I blew myself.
Yeah, yeah.
Apocalypse escapes. Archangel stops the horseman. Apocalypse escapes. Wolverine tries to claw the ground and can't get through. His ship launches out of nowhere. And honest to God,
destroys one of the landmarks of the U.S. or the entire UK. World.
And the only thought I have as the episode ends, two things. Archangel gets all mopey, and Rogue has the most inappropriately hilarious line in the history of television. I took the evil away when I touched you. Holy cow. And the episode ends, and the only thing I can think is, what happened to Cable? He just disappeared.
He's nobody hiding in knows. Shadows.
He was there to stop Dr. Adler from creating collars that control mutants, but not stop Apocalypse from destroying the world?
Well, we'll find out next, because you know what's next.
Days of Future Past. So that's the end of this two-parter that wasn't a two-parter. So, and there's not a better way to end it than I took the evil away when I touched you.
Bow chicka bow wow.
This is really uncomfortable. It was uncomfortable when Gambit was hitting on Rogue. Well, he says something Like, you can take my, you can drain,
drain all my energy.
Yeah. I was like, oh, dear God, that's in a children's show? But I took the evil away when I touched you.
You, well, you know, like, it's funny because we were talking about the clothing thing. The only time I think that you ever see Rogue, there's 2 points, I think, so far that we've seen Rogue wearing other than her normal outfit. That wasn't a flashback. That's when they go shopping in the mall and the Sentinels come after Jubilee.
Yeah.
And because she changes clothes there, and that's, I think, the only time we see Storm in a different outfit.
Yeah, because Storm uses lightning to change into her other outfit.
I guess she just burned off the outer outfit.
Yeah. I didn't need these clothes.
Yeah. And then the one where you see Gambit and her Gambit Rogue, I guess, go into the hot tub.
I forgot about that. So yeah, that's the end of.
So that's Rogue's entire wardrobe.
Yeah. The X-Men's wardrobe, man. So yeah, we'll be back next week talking about the two-parter that is Days of Future Past, which is.
And then we've only got one more after that for the final decision
for the first season one. Yeah, we'll be.
Is that your final decision?
Yeah, and then we'll find out the real answer to the question. Did the evil stay gone once Rogue took it away?
No, the evil never stays gone.
Blast!
So, go rate us and review us on iTunes. All three of us are on Twitter. I'm on Twitter at Deadpool1979. DEDPOOL1979.
I'm at Polk79, POLK79.
And I like to keep it official on Twitter at OfficialTonyK.
So, yeah, go follow us. Feel free to tweet us about how much you hate the fact that we're kind of making fun of these episodes. I hope everybody's laughing with us. So.
Do us a favor. If you're going to be critical, go back and watch the episode first.
Yeah, please.
Yeah, they're on Hulu, guys.
Yeah. Commercial free, too. So, cause,
there you go.
Because they're part of Hulu Kids, and Hulu Kids is commercial free. So,
I kind of wish they weren't commercial free. I actually wish they were commercial filled with all the old commercials that used to come on during that.
That would be awesome. So
that's what they need, a website that's just called Saturday Morning Cartoons. And it's the re-air with all the original commercials of all of the original Saturday Morning Cartoons.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I can't wait to talk about Days of Future Past and see how it holds up to, like, I was not a big fan of the movie, right? So I'm interested to see how this animated version holds up.
Whatever.
So, but we'll get into that next week. So
yeah. I think they should totally change the name of Apocalypse to Come the Apocalypse. Come what?
Come the Apocalypse.
Yeah. X-Men, Come the Apocalypse.
Look, I'm just saying that this episode,
the X-Men sex tape,
is full of innuendo. So, nice. I can't even. So,
X-Men, Jean Grey gets freaky.
Yeah. Don't Google Come the Apocalypse.
Oh, I'm so Googling this when we get off.
All right. So, we'll be back next week, guys.
Bye, everybody.
See ya.